very much for joining us. And get comment from Mark Lamont Hill. All the news is now rolling in as we end this broadcast. An update from Dallas. The city's police chief has just said the Dallas shooter was working alone and wanted to, quote, kill white officers. Authorities have not released the name of the suspected shooter who died after the ambush. Your thoughts?
You know, again, this my sources were sort of telling me that, and I began to wonder, you know, what that would mean in the big picture. Obviously, to me, whoever did it, I wasn't concerned with their race, with anything like that at the level of at the human level. But at the level of our movements and our resistance movements, we need to make sure that we don't conflate, again, one person with a movement. They're two separate things. This person clearly has mental health issues. This person clearly has some sort of issue that needs to be unpacked and understood. But we can't link that individual to this movement. There's been a lot of long, hard work being done here, and we can't be derailed.
Mark Lamont Hill and Graham Weatherspoon, I thank you so much for being with us. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Go to democracynow.org for all our updates. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR.FM, station making waves, broadcasting from Henry Ford College. Coming up next is our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our local public affairs show, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor here at WHFR.FM, and happy to have you with us. Today is July 8th, 2016. Obviously, if you listen to, and I hope you do, listen to the show that's on before this one on this station, Democracy Now!, or you heard any other news reports this morning, you know, it was another great tragedy, shooting tragedy in the United States. And that's beyond the compass of our WHFR Journal show. But we're all saddened that that has gone on. In Democracy Now!, if you listen closely, though, this is a point I make about the media, since I was, for 40 years, a full-time professor of telecommunication, teaching media history and audio production, radio production, TV production, all of that stuff, okay? And one thing that's always been true is that we, the general public, I'll include myself, think that there's more crime and more violence going on in this country and around the world than what there really is. And that's absolutely true. It's been true before, and it's true now. So several times in the Democracy Now! Show, they made a point to point out that there are fewer police shootings now this year than ever before. Tragic as they are, and as violent as they appear, and senseless as they appear on social media, there's fewer of them. And that fewer policemen shot in line of duty, too. And that's been true since 1986, when President, and especially in the last 6 years, 7 years, of President Obama's term in office. So some of these people that are saying crazy things on social media, why? Because they can get away with it, even though there's no factual basis to it, are just wrong, okay? So, I mean, the impression, if you listen to even National Public Radio, very objective this morning, the local Detroit Today Show with Stephen Henderson for an hour talked about this violence, and so did the first hour of the talk show that followed that. And, of course, Democracy Now!, once a day, they had to cover it because it's a big story of the day, okay? But they at least pointed out that, in fact, there is less major crime going on in this country. There is less death at the hands of police and to the police than ever before. Okay, so let that sink in, all right? And also something else that may be floating around social media, and I'll point this out. There is no evidence whatsoever that the snipers, two of them, who killed the five policemen and wounded a couple more, were the part of any group. They just, one of them is quoted as saying, through the police, of course, that they just didn't like white men and they didn't like white police. But were they, did they think it was exaggerated? I mean, the killings, the shootings, they're senseless and unnecessary, in my opinion, as an outsider, just looking at that same social media videos that everybody looks at. It seemed to be senseless and completely unnecessary that the police responded in the cases recently and before that resulted in the deaths of people who happen to be African-American. That shouldn't have happened. It doesn't make sense to me. Also, going back to Democracy Now!, and this is an ad. If you never listen to Democracy Now!, you go, oh, I only listen to Kornick because it's on a podcast. Remember, democracynow.org is the website. So you can listen every day to the new podcast, which is from, I mean, the show is done live in New York City from 8 to 9, and then it's a podcast from their website, democracynow.org. And so you can listen to that anytime you're by a computer or on your smartphone. I know it's an hour long, but it's really good objective summary of the news. And they put things in perspective that very often other commercial news sources don't do. And that's why I'm trying to help you with that, too. Okay? So any person's death diminishes me, even if it's a so-called natural death. Okay? I feel sad. I feel bad. And I think, is there anything I could have done? As one little person, is there anything I could have done to have helped that? The one thing they did point out in Democracy Now! In the last hour, today's episode, was that the average policeman in this country is not college educated. The majority are merely high school, I'd say merely, but they're high school graduates. They have 5 or 6 months of training on average, and they get one special in-service training of 1 week each year on one topic or the other. They get a lot of training on how to shoot straight. Okay, they have to pass the test that they can shoot straight. But, I mean, is there a test for shooting only those times when they need to shoot someone? I don't know. So, I mean, there's been proposals from the Obama administration and others, but it's local. Police are local, you know. When will the local police departments who have gotten into this trouble realize that they need to do, first of all, better training of the police? Maybe raise those standards. Mental health checks for the police, as because they got guns, right? As well as those mental health background checks for everybody else buying guns. It makes sense to me. So it's a difficult situation, and we all need to do things, and I'm not going to dwell on that, but it's kind of brought me down. I had a bad day today in addition to that news, which always sort of brings you down. That's why I try only to listen to National Public Radio, where it usually is more objective and less sensational. But when these big things happen, they kind of are forced to give them their due, which means cover it to the extent that the commercial stations are doing it, so they don't look like they're not doing their job. Well, I hardly heard anything about it on National Public Radio, so they're not very good journalists, I guess. Yeah, that's not true, but when Democracy Now! Includes it, you know it's important. By the way, they included, my segue here, a story about Bill Schuette, our Attorney General of the state of Michigan. He had a number of protesters, not about Black Lives Matter or anything else like that, but, it, well, not quite like that, but from people that want him to close down one of the oil lines that goes under our, I think, Lake Superior or north corner of Lake Michigan, because it's very old. And if it ruptures, we kind of lose all the fresh water in Lake Michigan and Lake Huron and maybe Lake Erie. I mean, it's that bad. And it again, the pipeline is owned by a private company called Enright. And they're the ones that let one of their pipelines in Kalamazoo a couple of years ago pop and destroy water and wildlife habitats. And that, I don't know if it's totally been cleaned up or not, but the same company doesn't seem that they're that responsible. Anyway, this pipeline, this oil pipeline under the lakes there, just north of the Lower Peninsula, is very old and really hasn't been seriously checked for a while. And so the strange thing was is that the story, which was covered, in Metro Times on their website, metrotimes.com, okay? The headline is that, and by the way, they called him Shoot or something. You know what that sounds like on Democracy Now, but we pronounce it, and that's kind of the way it is, Shuet. But we know in Michigan it's Schulte. Okay. Although if he tries to run for governor, somebody might bring up this alternate pronunciation as a slam against him somehow. But he says 40 thugs attacked his home. And oh my goodness, he said, they were knocking on his door, banging on his door for 30 minutes. That's what he said. Well, the police came and investigated. There was no arrest. And according to state police, individuals dispersed on their own. Okay. And one of the protesters said, maybe the loudness of our chants was a thing, but there was no banging on windows or doors or anything like that. That's from Dan Ayler, 29, of Lansing. He says, I find it disturbing that the attorney general is going to lie about what people were doing. Unquote. And the story concludes, again, from our Metro Times, which is a great investigative newspaper, even though they only have enough reporters and space enough and time enough to do 7 or 8 or 10 stories a week. They do a great job, and it's unique, and it's... I think stories that matter more than a lot of the other stories covered by the news and the free press, but that's my opinion. And by the way, all opinions expressed on this show and today, it's just me, Jay Koronick. Send your comments and thoughts and criticisms to whfr@hfcc.edu. Well, these protests about this pipeline, this oil pipeline, have become more visible as of late, especially as critics fear the degradation of its structure and ultimately the contamination of all of the Great Lakes. Environmentalists protesting the 63-year-old underwater oil pipeline began walking the length of Line 5 last month. Their goal is to bring attention to what they believe to be a cataclysmic environmental disaster in the making. In 1953, when the pipeline was constructed, engineers predicted that it would only hold up for 50 years. Well, we're now 13 years past that date, and activists believe an oil spill is in our future. And as we know, these things have happened elsewhere, especially the Enbridge. Did I say Enright? The company is Enbridge, E-N-B-R-I-D-G-E. And... that spill was near, it says Marshall, I think Marshall, but the spill resulted in 20,000 barrels or 840,000 gallons of heavy crude oil flowing into Talmadge Creek, which made its way into the Kalamazoo River. And that was from the Metro Times in their December story about the event. Oh, it was only last December. Oh, and it was mentioned, details were mentioned about that. A previous event in July 2010, so it was, okay, it was 6 years ago, to this month, a little birthday for the Enbridge oil spill that affected the Kalamazoo River. And the pipeline in northern part of upper of the lower peninsula was explained in that December article in the Metro Times. So it's too bad that our attorney general doesn't recognize a peaceful protest and the right to protest. That's what I think. By the way, Enbridge is a Canadian company. Okay. Moving on. I mean, this is a local news show, and pressandguide.com posted today a story, very nice story with a good picture in color of about the death of John Dunn. That's D-U-N-N. He was a longtime teacher with Dearborn Public Schools, and he completed his career here at Henry Ford College. In fact, when it first opened, and then he stayed here from the opening of the school, which was, I think, 62, this campus opened, and he stayed here till 1989. Well, I was hired into the English department at Henry Ford Community College, as it was then called, back in 1968. And John and I, full-time faculty group, was only about 15 or 16 people. So everybody then was really great and brilliant. I can mention all the names, I guess, but I might forget someone. Wouldn't want to do that. But John and I worked together. He was, besides his great English classes that he taught, he introduced film study into his more advanced English classes. So he would like run a dramatic fiction film, feature film, usually sometimes short films, and then use that as a way to encourage discussion, critical thinking, and of course, paper writing, which is what English composition, English literature papers are all about. You finally have to put it in words in print. Ooh, and he was great at that, but also innovative, as I said, and he also was the person who was the head of what was called our cultural activities program at that time, and now it's kind of split up, and different people bring different speakers to campus, but then for the whole campus, it was just John Dunn either working for no extra pay or very little, and on top of his full-time load, and he brought in several speakers or special challenging movies every week to be shown in our largest auditorium at that time, in our liberal arts building. I've had some of the most, even though I was a full-time professor myself then, but I had some of the most positive and illuminating experiences of culture with those people and those films that John brought in. So somewhere, I think it was in the 70s, I volunteered to help him, and then all of a sudden he kind of retired from that job, and it was split up because one person, like myself, could not do speakers for social science, political science, and all the rest of the campus. I don't know how John did. Oh, and how did he advertise it in the olden days before there was email? He went to every classroom on campus, like on a Friday or a Saturday when it was closed. He had a master key, and he would open up the door and put the cultural activity event listings on the side of each blackboard in every classroom in the liberal arts building, all three floors, and the science building too sometimes. Which only took him 4 or 5 hours every week. With his, imagine how much chalk, how much chalk dust he had to inhale. This man, and he was always great supporting me. And the age difference, in fact, when I came in, I was only 22 years old, full-time English instructor with his master's degree. But I had significant teaching experience already at University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and elsewhere, part-time. But still, they brought me in, and so I learned so much from all of the staff then, but especially, I think, John Dunn. He encouraged me to use the latest United States authors, the most challenging ones. And one was a long-haired hippie type, as people called him in the 60s. The book was entitled, the author's name was Richard Brautigan, who's not used too much anymore. And the book was Trout Fishing in America, but it wasn't really about trout fishing. Okay, it was about life in America, but little stories, little fictional stories, little situations, and it was great for classroom instruction and critical thinking and all of that. And he, just to support me, said, you know, Jay, when I went to college, I had a roommate, and he looked just like Richard Brautigan, long blonde hair, and he was a great guy, John said. I said, well, thank you, John. I mean, at least everybody else is saying, you know, this guy must be a kook because he had long hair down to his shoulders. And John was very supportive of that and helped me learn how to be a cultural activities director with my chalk and all the blackboards to write on and how to pick up guests at the airport and drive them around town. It was all part of the job. Also, now I was thinking that John, I used to, because he lived just a block or so over from me in West Dearborn in those early days. I think he lived on Edison, and I lived on Gregory, and for exercise, he would do brisk walking, which looks a little crazy. It's also referred to as fast walking in the Olympics. I'm not sure if he had hand weights or what. It was after a trip when he came back from India that his immune system was slightly damaged from some bugs that he caught there. And so he got into this exercise program, and he did brisk walking. Well, duh, I've done brisk walking for the last 15, 20 years, and I attribute it to my inspiration that John, even though some people say, well, that looks silly, why don't you just run? Yeah, well, you have to have the outfit for running and special shoes, you know, the shoes are not quite so important, although you need good supportive shoes even if you're doing brisk walking. So he was a real inspiration to me, a great leader. I remember he and most of the college came to the funeral for when my father passed away at too early an age, and he complimented me and my remaining family that it was a celebration of my dad's life, and he said, this is the way to do it. Be positive. Remember the love, and not just, you know, a lot of crying in that. And so he always seemed to say the right thing at the right time. He had a great smile, but very smart man. And there's a wonderful story in the Press and Guide that you can read probably in the Sunday's edition or on their website now, pressandguide.com. So more in the passing. Mr. John Dunn, his wife just passed away a couple of years ago. He was currently a resident of Henry Ford Village, and he was 91 years old when he died. So, John Conroy has arrived in the studio today. Your message didn't pop up on the phone because I was in our secure area here in the main studio, John. Let me turn on your mic so you can respond. But I'm hope you're safe and everything. Did you get flooded out down there in Gros Isle? I got a lot of flood warnings on my phone from the Dearborn Police today. So.
No, sir. We didn't have any rain today. We had rain Tuesday. Oh. But nothing in the last couple of days.
Well, our front desk manager, Ricardo, today has told me that he lives on the east side of Detroit, is that they had flooding, and the lower floor of his apartment building was all flooded. And not sure if it was the sewers or where it was coming from. And the flood warnings today, as according to the Dearborn Police Department, through my Nixle.com, Nixle.com, if you want them to send you text messages several times a day. And the flood warning is now extended to 6:45 p.m. tonight for this area.
Whoa.
So watch your driving as you go back to wherever you're going, John, Gros Isle or whatever.
Well, I did a little homework, Jay, I did a little advanced scouting just for the show.
Okay.
I hit the farmer's market for a little bit.
Yes, going to tell people about that, certainly. We're going to be, you and I can't be together, but I will be over there, and our station will be broadcasting reports from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then weather permitting, technology permitting, we're going to do the 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock show. I believe Susan McGraw, our general manager, is going to join me. And we've got Brian Stone, a candidate for Michigan 15th District, on the air. So it should be an awful lot of fun. So,
I also talked to you, or I talked to some of the people at the Beaumont Health Center area.
You were over at the market today, and they're one of the big sponsors.
And I told them to come see you.
Along with Henry Ford College and others.
That's right.
Yes, we have. I have a number of guests that have already been assigned. Thank you very much, Dearborn Chamber of Commerce. Well, you didn't have to do that. But there's some open slots, and certainly we want to see if we can talk to the people. We're taking our ultra-portable broadcast equipment, which is seriously a little box, and we're going to plug it into my iPhone. Got to remember to charge it up before I go out there. And so we're actually going to get to the vendors rather than have to pull the vendors over to our table. We can actually just do it right there. Because we like to use a professional microphone, folks. Well, I can take my cell phone anywhere. Yeah, but it's, you know, most cell phones, I mean, all due respect to Samsung and Apple, they've got crappy little microphones built in. I mean, I'm right now talking on a microphone here in the studio that retails for $600. Okay, we bought it for $300, but that's, you know. And the one that John has got right now, no disrespect, John, but that's only a $150 mic. But still, I'm just saying, they don't build that kind of stuff. They can't, because to be a really good microphone, it can't be that small. Just can't be that small to fit into a smartphone. So we're going to go out there, and we've got, as I said, Brian Stone scheduled for the Journal show from 1 to 2 o'clock. He'll get his 30 minutes of fame and tell people why they should vote for him in the August 2nd primary. But also David Kinesic. I thought he was going to be part of that hour. But then I get a message from the chamber. It's going to be at 11 a.m., so I've got to call back and reconfirm, which I haven't done yet today. I thought maybe I ought to wait until next week to see if he's going to, if his schedule is going to change again. But he's not running for re-election this time. But he knows a lot about what's happened in legislature, and so we'll ask him a few of those questions. So anything specially good for sale today? I know you like all those pastries and things, John.
Well, Jay, you'll have to judge the results a little bit later. I'm going to pull a little surprise for you.
Uh-oh.
And, yes, there are lots of goodies there. And I also spoke with, her name is Lisa Phillip from the admissions office of our campus.
Yeah, probably she'll be there next Friday, too.
Someone at the HFC table. Yeah, at the HFC table.
Yeah, we're going to be interviewing them. And, of course, if Susan McGraw is going to be there, she's our, besides our general manager of WHFR, the head of the telecommunication and journalism program here at Henry Ford College. And so we're going to be asking her about what that's all about, and as if I didn't know, and I never know the latest, because she knows the latest, and what's coming up in the fall for classes and enrollment times and all that. So it should be a fun day, weather permitting. If not, we're still going to be broadcasting, folks, but we'll have to do the journal show here, because electronics don't work too well when there's a downpour or a deluge.
When there's electricity shutting off like that.
Yeah.
Also, somebody from who runs the market will probably come up and say hello.
Yes. Well, we've got a couple of, as I said, we've got a couple of people already scheduled, and we have room for a few more. So that'll be next Friday at the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market, which sets up in the Bryant Library parking lot. That's also the lot in West Dearborn that's just north of Buddy's Pizza. Okay, it's a public lot just north of Buddy's Pizza, not their little private lot. And free parking all around there now for the last couple of years. You know, it's been free parking in West Dearborn except for just a couple spots, and I don't know where they are, but there's only about 5 or 10 spots, and there's still paid parking. I don't quite understand how that worked out. But anyway, looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to be calling in during the Big Band show, Big Band and Beyond, interrupting Joe Sullivan's wonderful music show a couple times an hour between 10 and 1. Democracy Now!, even though I highly recommended it today to you, because we're going to be out there and interviewing people, it's Community Day. also at the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. And that means all kinds of important people are going to show up, and we're going to try to get a few of them on the air. So again, you can always listen to Democracy Now! From their website, democracynow.org.
And there was also entertainment. There was a gentleman named Jimmy Dearborn was singing with his guitar at the head of the fair today.
Of the famous Dearborn family.
Head of the farmer's market, yeah.
Okay.
And he was very good. He stayed there until just before I left.
Going to have to be quiet during our journal show, but if he's there next week, I don't know. But yeah. I wanted to get into some positive news, although in terms of deaths, we've got a follow-up, and it's very confusing, so we got a follow-up about what's happening with trying to fill the seat for Julie Plawecki, the state rep. There's several stories that came out just yesterday because they had a special closed-door secret meeting in Garden City or Westland somewhere. So I want to try to cover that, but even I don't understand what it all means. Amazing, but true. But here's the good news, and it's a pro-life thing. Doesn't do with abortion. John D. Dingell turns 90 today. So happy birthday to our former representative, John D. Dingell. Of course, Debbie Dingell is now, in his seat, if you will, representing this part of the Dearborn area and part of the Down River area. And I don't know, the district is gerrymandered, so it goes all over the place. But it does her district does include, I think, most of Dearborn still. So happy birthday, John Dingell. Also, Paris, France, is celebrating their 2,000th birthday. They made it official. 2,000 years they've been around. Although the story, which was on history.com, they always have, a day in history. Okay. They said it was actually 250 BC. So it was it added an extra 250 years that a Gaelic tribe
called
Parisii, P-A-R-I-S-I-I, inhabited the Ile de la Cité, which is an island in the main river, the Seine, in Paris, and which is great little islands. It got all kinds of old buildings on it and restaurants, and but of course, Paris today is huge and spread all around. But nonetheless, they were the ones that just moved onto that island, and it was about 250 BC. And they were the ones in charge. And then 52 BC, the Romans came in. Julius Caesar invaded. He had a lot of gall, didn't he, to do that? Yes. France was referred to as Gaul, G-A-U-L.
A few Celtics, too.
Yes, right. And, of course, it went back and forth a little bit. But Paris, one of the great cities, for some reason they decided this is their 2,000th birthday. And to heck with those Gallics. Or Gaelics, Parisii is the name of the tribe. But anyway, so I guess they had to have an excuse for, celebrations of some sort. Paris is always a city of light, as they call it, and a lot of celebrations. And so happy birthday, Paris, even though they're a few years off. Also, this is the July 8th is the day that the Liberty Bell tolled for the Declaration of Independence. They didn't ring the bell, which had been rung before, but this particular bell in Philadelphia rang many times when they started distributing the printed copies of the Declaration of Independence. So they waited 4 days. It was written and was signed on July 4th, of course, but they waited to actually celebrate it with the printing of the document so that everybody could read it, handing it out, newspapers and so on. And no, it did not crack when they were tolling for the Declaration of Independence. Apparently it didn't crack until like 1830s or 1840s or something like that. And it is preserved, and it's sitting for a million tourists a year go to Philadelphia to see that. I wonder if the Democratic conventioners will go there too and pay their respects.
I'm sure they'll have tours.
Yeah. Apparently, this is strange. It cracked even a couple times before they went while they were making it, even before it was put in place, and they thought it was fixed. So, apparently, it lasted like 50 years of being told, rung before it actually did break again. But that those first repairs probably weren't all that great. Oh, okay, well, that's the day in history anyway. Let's get back, since I mentioned it, to the situation, Representative Julie Plawecki.
Yep.
And I've got several pieces of paper on that. Where are they here? They're hiding. I got it.
Okay.
I
think. All right. Yep.
Okay. The first one is from Press and Guide that I caught, and that was State Rep. Julie Plawecki's daughter is seeking to fill her mom's House seat, and her name is Lauren Plawecki, and she's only 22, and I can say that because I'm extremely old. I can say only 22. Now, she wasn't with the family while hiking in Oregon when her mother died, by the way, but two other daughters of in the family were with the mother, but she wasn't there, not that it matters, okay? And of course, Lauren believes that she's the best person to complete the projects because she knows what her mother wanted to accomplish. Okay, well... it says a primary election will be held on August 2nd with a general election set for November 8th. However, if you remember last week, we told you about the details. A special meeting of Democratic precinct delegates has been set for July 7th. That was yesterday. That was last night, folks, to select a candidate for Michigan's 11th House in the August 2nd Democratic primary. As we understood it here from this article, they were only going to select one candidate to have on that ballot on August 2nd. Okay, and they met at 6 p.m. last night at Westland City Hall. And their purpose is to elect three delegates who are then going to choose which Democratic candidate to put the name on the ballot. Okay, on the primary ballot. And the selection was to be made last night, which it was. So then who's got the story about what happened? The Arab American News had a reporter there. Again, they scooped the Press and Guide and the Times Herald. And at least on the websites anyway, they got the story up. So I'm giving them an awful lot of credit in the last 6 months, but they've got an actual journalism team. They actually seem to have reporters, dedicated people that go to these events. And so here's the story. As they say, it was a confusing and frustrating process last night at Westland City Hall. The delegates chosen by the 13th Congressional District Chairman Jonathan C. Kinlock and approved by a body of delegates selected Inkster Council member Jewel Jones. That's a guy, folks. Jewel with double L at the end for the position after reviewing each application. Okay. Now, 11 candidates applied for the position, including Lauren Plawecki that we just mentioned. And also other people you might know is Dearborn Heights City Councilwoman Lisa Hicks Clayton, Dearborn City Planner Mohammed Ayoub, and Dearborn Teacher Rashid Bedoun. Each candidate went into a closed room and was interviewed for 5 minutes by the three delegates. Jones was not present for the interview process but had a representative there. That's interesting. Sounds like it was a done deal at the outset. He didn't even get interviewed. But his representative was there. His spokesperson? What is that? What is that? And yet he's the one they selected finally. So it seems like it was a written deal, like the deal was in. The die was cast.
The fix was in. Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to say fix. I didn't want to say that.
Okay.
But John said that. So send all letters to John and email. Okay.
Implication was there, John.
Mm-hmm. Attendees appeared frustrated, as the article goes on, at City Hall. At Westland City Hall, as the entire process occurred during a closed-door meeting, including the selection and approval of the delegates, despite wide expectation that the meeting was open to the public. Kinlock told the Arab American News that he selected the three delegates who he thought were the most impartial and kept it under wraps so that the candidates wouldn't lobby them in advance. Plawecki said that she applied for the position because she felt she'd be best fit to honor her mother's legacy. Okay. And Hicks Clayton herself told the Arab American News that the process was confusing, but noted that it was uncharted territory. It's not often they do this, she said. I think it's interesting. I think it's definitely a learning process to see how they're doing it and why they're doing it. I think the chair for the 13th Congressional District, Democratic Party, did a really nice job of explaining it, unquote. But as the selection process ensued, frustration continued to grow. Minutes before Kinloch came out to announce, so if it was a closed meeting, how did this reporter get in? Or did he get it from somebody else afterwards? But Kinloch came out to announce the candidate who was selected. The Detroit News had already tweeted that Jones was chosen for the position before Kinloch even announced it in the meeting. So where was this Detroit News reporter? Behind the scenes, behind in the closed, scenes. closed doors of the closed session. Beydoun, again, who ran against Plawecki in 2014 and came in second place. Oh, they did announce who came in second. Well, that was sweet. Oh, no, came in second then in 2014. Said that he was concerned. Oh, did I say Rashid was a woman? Oh, I'm sorry, it's a man. Sorry. Said that he was concerned over how the process was handled. He said, quote, it was a very interesting process because the fact that the news was tweeting the results before the actual precinct delegates kind of really explains the process itself. I think there were some really qualified candidates. I also think that democracies die behind closed doors. If you want to change what's going on in the political landscape, it starts by having an open process and allowing access to the ballot box. How do you get people to be involved in democracy if there's all these hurdles? And we're talking here, I think he's referring to, and I know it's a problem, even if you were part of the Democratic Party in that district, not all the delegates, I mean, the three delegates that finally made the choice of Mr. Jones, that happened, during those interviews, behind closed doors of this so-called closed meeting. So even the democracy of the Democratic Party in the 11th District is brought into question here. Okay, but the story goes on. Here's the confusing part. So you might think, well, Jewel Jones, he's unopposed. There's no Republican in the primary, so he's obviously going to be running in November. Wait a minute. This week, Governor Snyder called for a special primary election taking place on August 30th for a candidate to complete Plawecki's term, which ends in January. That is not to be confused with Jones's run for a two-year term beginning next year. Candidates must apply by July 12th. So you follow that? So there is a special primary election for this 11th district, for the people in Garden City, Inkster, who's ever part of the district. Not going to be a lot of people voting then, isn't that right before the weekend of Memorial Day, Labor Day, August, whatever they call it?
Yeah.
My goodness. Everybody's out of town. That's what a great idea, Governor.
Labor Day.
Yeah, Labor Day. That's what it is, where you're not supposed to labor on Labor Day.
Supposed to have a day.
Why don't they call it Anti-Labor Day or Un-Labor Day? Anyway, because most people forget the reason they have a vacation is to honor labor, honor the unions, honor the workers and their organizations that represent them. Boy. Anyway, I remember. Because I'm very old. Okay, so you follow what I'm saying here. I'm trying to convince John and Bill Wright, who's sitting in on the show today too here, and they're nodding their heads like they don't know what this is. It seems like, okay, Jewel Jones was selected. His name will be on the ballot on August 2nd.
A long time ago.
The only one for the Democrats, I guess, because there's no one else going to be there. And there's no one on the Republican side, we learned, that was going to even oppose Plawecki when she was the person there. So it looks like in November, Jewel Jones, who's obviously going to win the primary because there's nobody else there, he'll be unopposed in November. So he's going to win the election for this office taking place in January and going for 2 years. Unless there's a write-in campaign. I mean, he's the only name on the ballot, for Pete's sake. In the primary, he'll be the only name to be elected for this precinct in November. There could be Libertarians or Green Party people right. That will be on the ballot in November, though. So we don't know about that for sure. That would be interesting to see what happens there. I mean, voters out in that area, you've got to be confused. But this special August 30th election, whoever wins that will be there for, in place of Plawecki, in Lansing, until Jewel Jones gets there in January, when the next term starts. So there will 3 months or whatever. That's what they're doing. And I think they have to do that. That's probably the Constitution that says the governor has to set up a special election. But what a mess. Well, democracy is rarely neat and clean, but I'm not sure this was democracy. It certainly raises a lot of questions here.
But voters, whatever election happens, whatever the circumstances are, they have the right to write in candidates
they do.
That they want.
And as I said, in November, there may be other party candidates of qualified candidates for Greens, Libertarian, and maybe some other party that will be on the November ballot. We don't know that because primary elections, well, they're not in the primary. No, the primaries are something that were thought of by the Democrats and Republicans to give more publicity for their candidates. I'm sorry. That's the absolute truth. So they're effectively closed to any other parties that would like to have a primary that way. Although personally, and I've told you on the show, I don't believe in primaries because they're a setup for the two controlling parties who don't necessarily know all the answers. I'd say most of the time, but that's my opinion. Okay, and I already gave the qualifier earlier.
I heard the qualifier earlier.
Yep.
All right. Although party the delegates that go to those primaries would beg to differ with you. I think I think they get something out of those primaries or the conventions, etc.
Okay, maybe. And obviously there's got to be a positive turn to all of it. I mean. Do we need a year and a half or 2 years of campaigning for the presidency? We didn't used to. This is only the second presidency where they've had to start 2 years before campaigning, and with all the debates among themselves and all set up to not include third party candidates, and even in the fall we may not get Gary Johnson and Libertarians or Jill Stein for the Green Party to be included in those major debates, even though they'll be on. Gary Johnson, for example, will be on the ballot in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. And Jill Stein is still fighting with the Green Party to get on the Georgia ballot, but they'll be very close to all 50 states, and even without Georgia, they could technically win the presidency if enough people in all the other states voted for them. This is to save my own soul here, or reputation, because on the show I've come up with all these crazy ideas, like no more primaries and so on. And last week I suggested, why can't we go back to fireworks? Because fireworks in the 1950s used to be quiet. Except maybe, okay, I understand, maybe the last firework was an explosion. I can't remember. But they were just pretty. Well, New York Times itself, June 30th, 2016, it has found a story about a whole new development. Quiet fireworks. Ooh, what a thought. And the writer doesn't have any, must be a very young person. It goes on for a couple pages, and they talk about through Europe, around the rest of the world. Wow, what an interesting idea. And one town in Italy passed a law in 2015 that all firework displays must be quiet. No recognition that in the 1950s, when I was young, in the United States, they almost were totally quiet. Anyway, so there's all this history behind it. All this explosion stuff didn't happen back then. And I know that was 60 years ago, I know. But there's something, Tom Hartman, who's a liberal broadcaster commentator on the internet and TV and radio and so on, he coined a phrase, the Great Forgetting, capital G, capital F. And that's when about every 7 to 10 years, people forget history, what actually happened before. And it's only bad because they do that. They forget. Like, what good are unions? Well, they forget what unions did that were really good, for example. So, quiet fireworks, what a concept. I wasn't crazy, folks. It's starting to catch on, at least in some places. By the way, the Dearborn Fire Department, and the Dearborn Police have issued a story that I saw on the web, too, that they had dozens of complaints about the noise during the 4th of July weekend. About inappropriate noise levels of fireworks. And some people described it, were quoted as almost like a war was going on later in the evenings. And I know in my area in East Dearborn, it wasn't just the day before the 4th and the day after, which was legal technically for consumers, private people to set off explosions, but it happened several days before. And I know I'm near Greenfield Village Henry Ford Museum, and they do it every night at 10 o'clock for half an hour. And that's so loud, you'd think there was a war going on by itself. But apparently business enterprises can get as loud as they want to any day they want to, because they're just trying to make a business, a profit. Okay, Greenfield Village, the Henry Ford, is nonprofit. God bless them. Okay. And also, to save my soul, my reputation, CBS Detroit Associated covered the story, and it's from the Associated Press, the most distinguished wire service in the whole world, out of Lansing, Michigan. They published the story. Are we overusing the tribute of flying the flag at half staff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And, of course, my facetious comment was, since it's always going to be at half staff these days for either state reasons or national reasons or any reason you can think of, then why not just chop it off halfway down and just fly it at full staff halfway up from then on? I mean, just because it doesn't, my point was, if you didn't get the irony or the satire of that comment, if it's always at half staff, it loses meaning. It loses significance. It's supposed to only be when the whole country, or at least the whole state, mourns the loss of someone or something. And as I said, something? Yes, it's been done even when certain celebrities have died. I don't know which ones. And police dogs. Police dogs have died, too. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, all these deaths should be mourned appropriately. But how much time do you have to mourn them all? How much time? What if you get an email once a day? All these people just died. Mm-hmm. Well, it would go on and on and on. I mean, how many people die every day? You know, and it's all sad. It's all tragic. It's unfortunate, even if it was natural. I think it's unfortunate. And I'm sure those people do, too, who passed. Anyway, unless they were in pain. So there, CBS and the Associated Press actually had this story out about the value or the continued value of flying flags at half staff when they're always at half staff. So it lost its whole meaning. We've got other things. John, I know you've got a big notepad there. Anything you want to include? We have 10 minutes before Highway 61 and Kitty Love comes on with The Best in the Blues.
Well, you were mentioning John Dingell a little while ago. Mm-hmm. This is Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And Debbie Dingell has had a meeting with key Alzheimer's advocates and caregivers in Taylor, and they to discuss what can be done about that disease. And it affects many, many people, and the care of it also is very, it changes from person to person depending on your resources sometimes. And I just wanted to point out that Debbie Dingell is a big supporter of this Alzheimer's Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have Uncle Sam Jam this weekend in Woodhaven.
Mm-hmm.
3 days of celebrating and also fireworks coming up. It is.
Yeah, I have, and we'll go over this too when we get more time, although our show is going to be so filled with candidate interviews before the primary election, we won't have a lot of time, but there is, I'll refer to our listeners, that in the newspaper, I don't think it's on their website, but at pressandguide.com, and apparently they have a Facebook page, and often folks, the Facebook pages for these newspapers have more on them than the paper website. Why is that? Because everybody uses Facebook, and so if they like it, it'll automatically pop up on their phone. But so facebook.com/pressandguide. Summer full of fun. So it's a whole page. It goes month by month, ongoing and into July, August, and even September about fireworks, city festivals, movies, concert, music concert series, and things are really booming all around town, as they are every summer, of course, something to do every weekend. there's something going on, let's see, in Woodhaven. It started July 7th to 10th over this weekend. There's fireworks tonight, July 8th, Civic Center Park, Hall Road in Woodhaven.
That's the Uncle Sam Jam, Jay.
Uncle Sam Jams. Yep. And it's UncleSamJamFest.com. Okay, I'm just trying to find other things.
I wanted to tell you, you know, the Jazz on the Avenue lineup begins this Wednesday, the July 13th, and Alexander Zonchick and Friends with special guest Joey Somerville on the trumpet will be playing.
Yep.
And he's a flautist, John Zonchick is, and he's also Atlanta-based trumpet soloist Joey Somerville will join Zonchick as the special guest playing.
And there's also entertainment tonight, July 8th, in West Dearborn, too, and I can't find it here now.
The Top Dog, Joe's Top Dog.
Well, there's that always.
And
that's in East Dearborn.
Dave Tatro is playing the trumpet there tonight, as well as the Rich Michaels Trio.
Right. Tonight in that Bryant Library Muirhead Plaza between the library and Buddy's Pizza, Jody Raffol plays rock, classic rock, and alternative. So that's tonight, July 8th. And the concerts begin at 5 and run until 9 p.m. 4 hours? Oh, my gosh. That's also the food truck rallies, too. So I doubt the concerts go that long. But there's food from food trucks, and they'll be in the parking lot there. And, of course, Buddy's Pizza is there, too. Then, of course, music by Jody Raffol, R-A-F-F-O-U-L, tonight. Rock, classic rock, alternative music is going to be played. Yes, and Alexander Zonchick and Friends is going to start next Wednesday night at Jazz on the Avenue at the historic City Hall Park, Michigan Avenue, corner of Schaefer. They're still calling it Historic City Hall Park. Mm-hmm. Well, Historic City Hall is still there. It's not the functioning City Hall anymore, of course. So I guess they're still calling it City Hall Park because they're calling it Historic City Hall Park.
All right. Oh, so many other things. What are we going to squeeze in here?
Well, we can't forget in terms of events, and we have announcements that are running every hour, not only about our special broadcasting and live remote from the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market next Friday, July 15th, but next weekend, the 16th and 17th, is Concert of Colors in the Max M. Fisher Complex. That's Orchestra Hall and also a second auditorium, all indoors, air conditioned, very luxurious, and all free. All kinds of artists, local Detroit artists, all formats. Music that you hear pretty much on WHFR because you won't hear it hardly anywhere else. It's just a great schedule. You can go to concertofcolors.com to check, or .org. What's one? Org? Okay. Concertofcolors.org. You sure? Okay, we're not sure. It's one or the other. Just put in Concert of Colors in your browser search, okay, and you'll get to their website and give you an update on the times and places. There's three stages, one outdoors, two, just south of Maxim Fisher Center on Woodward, and it's just great. It's just great fun, and there's different vendors, and there's nonprofit groups that have tables set up for information, and we're going to be broadcasting, as we've done for many years now, all of the music performances from the number two stage indoors, which all the time is called the Music Box, but they usually rename it to something else. Usually called the Diversity Stage, but somebody told me the other day it won't be called the Diversity Stage this time. But anyway, we'll be broadcasting all those performances live on WHFR next Saturday and Sunday. That is interrupting our normally scheduled programming between 1 p.m. and 10 p.m. at night. So tune in for that. But even better, come on down and see us. We'll have our own table in the lobby, and our broadcasters will be, of course, at a table, busy broadcasting, the Music Box facility there, right in the same building as the Orchestra Hall. And there's a lot of parking around there. Some of it's free, guarded lots, if that's what you're into. Not too expensive. And come on down to Concert of Colors. It's really a fantastic event. And I see that although Concert of Colors is organized through The Arab American National Museum, by the way, although it's not just Arab artist at all there, but they're going to do, they have a special tribute, a theme, if you will, and it's a social action theme, the right to clean, safe water for every human being. And that's the heart of a community forum kicking off the 24th Annual Concert of Colors. And it's going to be entitled Artists Speak, Water is Life. It's the theme of this year's forum that's going to actually be at the Arab American National Museum Annex, Michigan Avenue in Dearborn, next Thursday. So before the big Concert of Colors night, 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. on July 14th is going to be the forum. And they've got artists and activists will give their thoughts with performances and presentations focused on the topic of the right to clean, safe water for every human being. You'd almost think there should be no need to emphasize that. But apparently there is, as people of Flint well know. Okay, so that's going to be so many announcements for the week. We've got only 2 minutes now before Kitty Love gets on the air. And she's already looking over my shoulder, squinting at the clock. So, John, a big finale story.
Just finale for me is remember everyone deployed. Wear red on Fridays to honor our veterans and those overseas taking care of us as a country.
Well, that sounds good to me, John.
One more quick thing. If you hadn't got your fill of fireworks, there's also fireworks at the Flat Rock Speedway tomorrow night.
Along with the car crashes and the unmuffled exhausts.
There we go.
You'll be half deaf before they get to the fireworks anyway, so it won't matter. Yeah, I grew up in Flat Rock. I know well about those races.
Yep.
Yeah. Great fun if you like that. Anyway, have a great weekend. Be careful out there. Don't try to get too upset or depressed about the news. Remember, the social media and the commercial media overemphasize and exaggerate and sometimes even get things wrong for the sake of sensationalism, what's happening. Things are better than you might get the impression they are. So try to keep it together. Be nice to each other, but be careful with what you do. And we'll be back again next Friday from the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. Come on by and say hello to yours truly, and a lot of the WHFR staff will be there from 10 a.m. all the way till 2 p.m. The market itself will be broadcasting from 10. We'll be setting up around 9 o'clock because the market opens at 9, which is when John got there today, I'm sure. Got to see what he brought. Well, take care out there. This is WHFR.FM. Stay tuned for Highway 61, Best in the Blues with Kitty Love.
That I know. It run from the Twins.